Welcome, everyone, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne. Let's begin by pausing, taking a purposeful and mindful pause. If you'd like, allowing the eyes to close and turning awareness within. Turning within to that sense of where you feel your connection with Source, with Spirit, with the Holy Spirit, with love, whatever you want to call it. Bringing your attention to that place in your body where you feel connected. Connected to love with a capital L. And just breathing. If we notice the mind wandering, simply noticing that and choosing to bring attention back to this place within, this inner altar, where love's presence makes itself known to us. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a thought, if we need to hear something tonight, whatever it is, we trust that these gifts will be given and that we'll hear them. And taking a nice mindful breath in and out. With the love in your heart and the light in your mind, coming together to our perception of this time and place. Alrighty, so we are picking up midsection from where we left off last week. If you have the Sparkle Edition, we're on page 391 at the very top of the page. Again, Sparkle Edition, page 391. In the original edition, it's chapter 16, part 6. The subheading is Specialness and Guilt. And then it's down to paragraph number 48. The sentence begins, the special relationship is a strange and unnatural ego device. And then Foundation for Inner Peace Edition is chapter 16, part 5. The subheading is called The Choice for Completion, and it's paragraph number 6. All right, so we've been reading about special relationships. The special relationship is a strange and unnatural ego device for joining hell and heaven and making them indistinguishable. And the attempt to find the imagined best of both worlds has merely led to fantasies of both and to the inability to perceive either one as it is. The special relationship is the triumph of this confusion. It is a kind of union from which union is excluded, and the basis for the attempt at union rests on exclusion. What better example could there be of the ego's maxim, seek but do not find? So again, this idea that the special relationship is a union based on exclusion, in that we're excluding our true self, our capital S self, and instead turning away from that to try to find a substitute for it, to try to find a substitute for the love of God instead. And I really like how it says in this paragraph that the attempt to find the imagined best of both worlds has merely led to fantasies of both and the inability to perceive either one as it is. So that's our sort of problem in this world, is that we're unable to perceive reality as it is, and we don't perceive this world as it is either, because the world, as we've read about and learned, is wholly neutral. It's neutral. It's nothing, and we see it as very much something. So I like that sentence, because we neither see the world nor truth as it actually is. And then it goes on to say that the special relationship is what comes out of this confusion. It's our ultimate substitute for the love of God. So I'll pause there so far to see if anyone has anything coming up.
Hi, Corinne. This is Meg. I just got on.
Hi, Meg. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Do you need a page reference?
Yeah, it would be lovely.
Which edition of the book do you have?
Inner Peace.
Foundation for Inner Peace. So it's my page 342, but for you, I don't know what printing you have. So it's chapter 16, part 5, and then we just read paragraph number 6.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. So anybody else have any thoughts come up so far? Anything that stands out to you in this paragraph? I also like the last sentence where it says, what better example could there be of the ego's maxim, seek but do not find? So again, it's this ultimate confusion where we're looking for something that isn't here. And that's how the ego wants to keep it. It doesn't want us to remember the love that we truly are, because it knows we'd abandon it in a heartbeat. And that process has already begun. So, and it's already over at the same time, but you know what I mean. Let's read the next paragraph. Most curious of all. I think you have some background noise. I just heard a police car. If you wouldn't mind muting your line until you're ready to share, that would be awesome.
I had turned it off. Hadn't it gone away?
I'm sorry?
I had already muted it. Hadn't it gone away?
Oh, no, it didn't. I still heard it. I don't hear it now, though, so maybe you muted. Thank you, Meg. Okay, so let's read the next.
Hello?
Yes.
I don't know if my mute's working or not. I'm using the mute on the phone.
Okay, I hear you now, so I didn't for a short time there, so it sounded fine.
Okay, but what is the other, is it star something else I can do to mute? Because I just use mute on the phone.
Star 6 is another option.
All right, thank you.
Great, thank you, Meg. Okay, so next paragraph. Most curious of all is the concept of the self which the ego fosters in a special relationship. This self seeks the relationship to make itself complete. Yet when it finds the special relationship in which it thinks it can accomplish this, it gives itself away and tries to trade itself for the self of another. This is not union, for there is no increase and no extension. Each partner tries to sacrifice the self he does not want for one he thinks he would prefer. And he feels guilty for the sin of taking and of giving nothing of value in return. How much value can he place upon a self that he would give away to get a better one? So the way that I think, the example actually that came up for me when I was reading this paragraph before, the first thing I thought of, I think this movie came out like a very short while before I sort of started studying the course. Do you remember the movie Jerry Maguire from the 90s and that like famous line that you complete me? Him, I think it was him saying to the female character, you know, you complete me. And I remember people just gushing over this movie. And even before I picked up the course, I was like, this is so stupid. I never understood, you know, the popularity of that line, whatever. But that's, to me, what this is talking about, that it's seeking another self to make itself complete. In other words, or another way of thinking about it, too, with what it talks about with sacrificing the self, you know, and exchanging it for one that he thinks he would prefer, it makes me think about, you know, in this situation, an example is that, you know, you're giving yourself to this other person rather than giving yourself to God, rather than both parties giving themselves to God and being used on behalf of awakening. They're instead just giving that self to one another to fill the void that they feel, because it is that we are looking for love, of the love of God with a capital L.
So I think it's that we're looking to get that from another person, and
yeah,
that's the
yeah.
mistake.
Yeah, I agree. Let's read the next paragraph. The better self the ego seeks is always one that is more special.
Hello?
Have you ever seen... Hello?
I'm just really messed up with doing the star six and muting and unmuting. I wanted to ask a question.
Oh, sure.
It's so funny. And I was saying, can I ask a question? And I didn't know I was still muted. The question I have is this. I know I came in late, but I'm trying to, like, get a grasp on this. The ego is the false self, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So the ego is what we think we are, but not what we actually are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So my question is, without the ego, and with the ego gone, that self is no longer there. The confabulated
self.
Yes.
Right.
That self is no longer there. So what's left is egolessness. Is that correct?
Yeah, and that egolessness is that joining. It's that love that we are. It's that eternal state of being in the mind of God and extending that love forever outwards.
So the egolessness is a state that we're aiming for, but not necessarily a state that we're experiencing, because generally we're experiencing in some way, shape, or form being an ego.
I would just tweak the first part of your sentence and say that rather than it being what we're aiming for, we are already in egolessness, but we've chosen to think that we're somewhere else.
Okay.
So it's over. It's done. That's what it means when the Course says, you know, the answer was given the instant we had the question come up. So this is already healed, but we just haven't let go of that yet. That's not healed.
So then it kind of seems like that the person that's seeking is the ego. So the person that's seeking for the egolessness seems that it must be the ego.
That's cool. I like that, Meg. I like that.
If we're already without the ego, but we just don't recognize that we are, then if we're already without it, then there is no search for us.
Right.
So
there's
the search,
nothing. Yeah.
So the search has to be the ego searching, doing the search.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. And yet, again, there's no cause for guilt there because we have to be where we're at. The blocks that we choose to keep in the mind, you know, we're not ready to let go of some of them and assert that it's something elsewhere, you know, might feel more safe than just waking up to, you know, reality right now. But I agree with you that there's actually nothing to seek. And the Course says that somewhere. I feel like we may have read it very recently, where it's just, you just need to let love be itself. I'm just going to look back from last week. I don't know if it was that recent, but I feel like we read a sentence just like that recently that basically says, you know, there is nothing to find, that truth already, love already just is, and it's simply a matter of accepting that that's our truth right now, that that's true. So I think that was beautiful what you said, that the search has to be, you know, from the ego that thinks that it's something to be achieved in the future versus waking up to it right now. But at the same time, you know, the ego is our primary identity, and that call to awaken, we might hear it being, you know, rather than, again, just awakening to it right now, we interpret it as something then that we need to maybe find. So it's not that searching is bad at all. It's you know, a means of healing the mind. So I like how you said that. Beautiful. Does anybody have anything to add?
Just you know, for some of us, myself, I guess, it's almost like there's a scale, and I think the Course seems to represent mastery of the Course. And from what I'm hearing, it sounds like you've really got a better control, or maybe control is the wrong word, but you've kind of put the ego in its place. And my thought as you guys were talking was like, to me, it's like if I was without the ego, I think my body would be dead. That's what it feels like. But somehow, many of you on the call have various levels of mastery where you can control, or not control is the wrong word. You have a good handle on the ego. You know when it's coming. You know when to ask for the Holy Spirit. And that's where I plead guilty. That my ego just punches me around, you know, and I'm guilty of that. So I'm not afraid to admit it. I'm not proud of it. But that's what it sounds like, that there's, with the Course, that as you learn the Course and put it into practice, you learn this, right? Am I wrong? It sounds like it.
You do learn this, but a few things that are just popping up for me right now. One is that, like when you said you're guilty of, you know, letting your ego beat you around, I can't say I'm not without an ego, absolutely not. And it's just now that I've gotten better at distinguishing between, like, you know, its voice and the voice of the Holy Spirit. But there came a point, and this is what I say oftentimes too to people who are just really struggling with feeling like they're not, you know, getting this, that there'll be a point in time when you're just tired of it, like when you've just had enough with listening to the ego, and that to me was a turning point where I was like, you know, I'm done with this. Like, I'm done with listening to this fearful voice. I'm ready to take the next step, whatever that, you know, next step may be. So I don't know if that is helpful or not, but that's just one thought that comes to mind. And it's, I wouldn't even call it like a mastery of the Course. It's just a willingness to listen to the Holy Spirit. And it's a willingness that grows each time I'm willing and, you know, experience a shift that builds my trust, which then makes me more willing, which then, you know, I experience another miracle, which then builds my trust. It's literally like a I want to say, not even like a brick by brick, but like a stone by stone process where for me it's been that gradual because that's all I was ready for. And for me to think that I wasn't advancing quickly or that I was still stuck in this pattern and others were getting it and I wasn't, again, that's just another ego ploy. It's just another, you know, voice of this belief that we have about ourselves, that I just, again, was willing to catch. So whenever the ego, you know, is beating you up, again, it's just another opportunity not to do anything, not to judge it, not to try to fix it, but just like we've gone back to so many times saying, help, you know, like, I'm willing. And that trust builds. So those are just some random thoughts that come up. And the other thing that I just wanted to say too, and again, I want to, if other folks have responses, I want to hear them. When you said that, you know, without an ego, the body would be dead. Remember that death is the ego's best evidence. It's strongest witness that we pulled off the separation, that, you know, that death is real, that you are a body. Without any, like, the body is wholly neutral, and what happens through it depends on which voice we're listening to, whether we're listening, you know, to the ego voice or the Holy Spirit voice. Mm. And so the Course isn't teaching us about the immortality of the body. There is, I'm trying to remember the line in the Course that says it's neither sick nor ill, like just when its usefulness is over, it's laid down and that's it. Like it's extremely gentle. So would the body, with wholly without an ego, would the body not be here completely? Like if the ego is completely gone, I think that that question can arouse a lot of fear because I know that used to freak me out. Like if I ace the Course, does that just mean I'm going to die? And no, there's awaking up from the dream of death. It's not just even awaking up here in the dream. It's literally waking up from the dream, which is different. And so that's where, again, trust for me comes in, that when that time comes, whatever that time, you know, whatever that time is gonna be, that like it's I'm gonna be like, bring it on, you know, like it doesn't happen before I'm gonna be ready on whatever level. So those are just a few thoughts that come up for me, and I'd love to hear if anybody else on the line has anything to add.
Well, the one thing Brian said, and he used the word guilt, and I'm gonna tell you right now, Brian. Going to tell you right now, I'm going to give it to you. You are guilty of absolutely nothing. And let me tell you, when you have these experiences where you make a breakthrough, that's when that freaking ego will get in there and try and undo that on you. It is suspicious at best. And can be very vicious. And we really must be diligent in remembering our guiltlessness. Mm. And you know what? Sometimes we fall flat on our face, and believe me, I've been doing that lately. And I had a wonderful experience yesterday with in a situation where everything was going to hell in a handbasket. And I really brought the Holy Spirit into it because I just felt like crying. I really did not know which way to turn. And this person that I was with, I'm very fond of, and she just seemed to be having a terrible reaction to something I did or said. And really became quite unpleasant. And I just thought, I can't control this. And I made a mistake here, and I just thought of our brilliance, all of our brilliance, the light within us. And I thought, angels, just come into our minds and shift this for us, because this is just what we're talking about here. This is all the ego. This is all not the truth about either one of us in this situation. And do you know, I, honestly, within a very short time, the whole situation turned around. And I actually had a chance to kind of apologize. It wasn't even an apology that was intended, but just was able to explain myself a little bit. And she just totally seemed to understand. And that's all we really need to do, you know, is just ask the angels, ask Holy Spirit. It's all the same thing. The angels, the Holy Spirit, it's all the same thing. Do you agree with me, Deidre?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That divine presence, when you invite it in, can just, but I'm telling you now, that experience was so powerful. That was a real deep experience for me. And then today, I was right back in the mix, you know, of the ego nonsense. And again, I think it really, when we have those experiences, it becomes threatened. But I hate to even say that, because this thing doesn't even really exist. But it rears up when we make progress. And we must not, you know, we really must be diligent in remembering our guiltlessness. All of our guiltlessness.
Yeah, thanks.
May I add something?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay.
Please.
I was on a retreat last year, because this is 2016. And during the time I was on retreat, it was a silent retreat. And I wasn't necessarily trying to get rid of the ego or anything. I was painfully trying to meditate. And it was kind of grueling, because we had to sit for 40-minute sessions, and that was a lot for me. And we'd get like a 15-minute break, and then we'd have to sit down again. So mostly I was thinking about how I was going to remain comfortable during that period. But while I was walking, and as I said, I wasn't trying to do anything, the sense of me having an ego or me being an I just melted. It just wasn't there anymore. And I just walked, and having my little walk that I had to have before it was time to go back into the meditation hall and meditate again. And just to answer your question, Brian, for those few moments, because I don't realize how long it lasted, I didn't have, I really don't know how to explain it. I had no thought of I or me or ego or anything. And it wasn't an extraordinary experience. It was ordinary. It was just ordinary. But there wasn't any me there. And I still continued walking, and I still continued knowing that I would have to go back to the meditation hall to meditate. But there wasn't an ego, and there wasn't a me, and there wasn't this imagined mini-me that's in my head. So the body still continues when the ego is gone, when the I is gone. It just continues doing, you just continue doing all the things you would do. What's gone is all the baggage of ego and I and thought, the ego thought. You still have thoughts about, you know, if you have to go back to your room or you have to go to sleep or whatever. But it's a shift. There's no subject there. the subject's gone. So life still continues without an ego, and it's not fearful. It's, for me, it was just rather ordinary. But there was an eye there. But there was a perfume. There was a perfume with it. And, you know, we tend to think of perfume being some kind of lovely fragrance. I don't know if I would describe it as that. But there is relaxation. Because there is no more conflict with the ego gone. So that glimpse didn't last very long for me. You know, and maybe it happened because I was in a conducive atmosphere. But it gave me a glimpse into knowing that the body still exists, things still happen without the ego and the I being there. That's, for some, I would say, it happened for me that way. So I'm sure it would happen for some that way also. It doesn't mean it would happen for everyone that way, because we're all individuals. But I just wanted to share that period that happened with me.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Meg.
Wow. Cool.
That's beautiful. You know, I have a couple of things just to share. And Meg, that was a beautiful, beautiful experience. The thing that stands out to me is that just like experiences of revelation, holy instance, as we start this, I don't want to say start, as this undoing process seemingly, you know, is happening, that we have those glimpses, we have those moments of letting go of the small I, you know, the small self. The thing is, though, in this world, they don't really last. You know, like, I think about Jesus, and, you know, there is an example of, I think, you know, him being egoless. But from a Course perspective, too, that if we were purely without ego, I don't think we'd have interest in being here anymore. I think we'd want to be in in the love that we are. I don't think being in a separate seeming state would have any appeal. I think we'd be like, you know what, I'm out of here. This isn't, and that's just like if you think about near-death experience stories and things like that, there's this like pull, this draw, not that anything is forcing you, but that like, no, I want to go to this love, to this light. So that's just something that came up for me that I just wanted to share. And
well,
then,
Corinne,
Brian, I also... Oh, yeah?
But, Corinne, it doesn't actually have to be that way, that we would feel a pull to get out of here. It doesn't necessarily have to be that way. It might be that way for some. But for others, it might be that without the ego, you can be here easily and more comfortably. And there's no expectation anymore. So it's not that you would feel that you need to leave. You wouldn't feel that you needed anything. You just continue normally.
Yeah, I totally, totally hear what you're saying. I feel like the Course's message is a little bit different, which is fine. And, you know, it really is neither here nor there. Like, it, whatever our feeling is and our experiences, that's, go with that. Honor that, you know, and go with that. So I think it's...
I agree.
Yeah, I think that we could get caught up in saying how it is when, you know what, do we really know? we can only stick with our own experience. So yeah, we have to honor that.
I think what really came through for me when you were talking earlier and you said you were talking about making a choice and just saying like, I don't want this anymore and I'm just going to lay it down. And I think that for me, that's what in A Course in Miracles, Jesus is saying is possible, is the choice is possible. The choice for peace is possible. Because I know the more that I practice, you know, what the Course is saying. When I first started studying the Course, I would ask for healing straight out. Like I would, you know, be like, God, please take this anxiety from me. Please take it away. You know, heal my body so that I don't have to be in the world using a walker. You know, fix me so that I'm better. And really now it's about, I'm not asking to be fixed. I'm not asking to be healed. I'm simply looking every day at what's coming up as another opportunity to look at things with Holy Spirit and say, okay, this is an area where I'm not seeing with Christ's vision, but I'm willing to be shown. Because if it's making me uncomfortable, uncertain, doubtful, anxious, hurting, painful, anything like that, I know which voice that I'm listening to. And so, like Corinne was saying, it's like, I don't want that anymore. And it's just continually making that choice. So if you have these little things spring up, it's not that you've done anything wrong. I'm getting to the point where in looking at things with the Course, you know, like, crappy things might happen and it might feel really shitty in the moment. I've had a couple of those recently, but it doesn't take me long to come out of it, to come out of that, oh, that really felt really shitty. You know, that really felt really bad. And then, you know, once I'm ready to look at it with Holy Spirit, I see the blessing there and I'm thankful for it. And it sounds funny to say, but I'm almost thankful for the crap coming up now, because it means that my willingness is there to wake up. My willingness is there to step into the truth of what I am and not stay in a place that's connected to the falseness.
Mm-hmm. That's so fantastic. Oh, God. That is so good.
That is so good. And that's beautiful. I'm so, you said that so beautifully, Deidre. And that's why the crap comes up, so it can be healed. So, yes, let's bring, you know, let it come up.
Bring it on.
Bring it on. Let's
wait. I'm not so sure about that.
Gently, as we're ready. It comes up to be healed. So there's no, you know, so being, feeling gratitude for everything that comes up, no matter what it is, because it's an opportunity to look at it with the Holy Spirit. Awesome.
I don't even know if I would say healed, because, like, that would infer that there's something that's unhealed, but it's more that it's like what you said, Corinne, I don't need this. I don't need this. I release it, or something to that effect, because I'm the one keeping a thought system in place that, or the part of my mind that believes that I'm Deidre is keeping something
and
in my mind.
When I say healed, it's the perception that needs healing.
Right,
coming up because it's my perception that needs healing. So that's just what I meant when
healing.
It's always our perception.
Not to be splitting hairs or anything.
No, it's helpful to just all, you know, it's sometimes we use different words to mean the exact same thing, and, you know, we can get caught in, like you said, splitting hairs. But awesome.
One of the lines I read or listened to on one of my Course tapes, where it says, "Let all things be exactly as they are," is really And I'll walk around saying that. All right, let me just let this be exactly as it is. And then I go, So it's like not guilty. Let it go.
Yeah, not guilty.
Let it be. Just let it be. Yikes.
I had something I wanted to add from a while ago, Brian, from just something that you said that I jotted down that I just wanted to bring up again. And I just wanted to say to you, we are not separate. And if you see mastery of any form in others, if you see when you said control wasn't the right word, but like, you know, you see that I don't even know what the right word is, that progress, I think you used the term mastery of the course, so I know what you're saying. If you see that, if you see states in others that it seems like people are getting it or working it or whatever you want to say, that's because that's in you. So I just felt moved to share that. But if you see that progress or that peace or that happiness, whatever it is, if you see that in anyone else, it's because that's in you.
That's amazing.
So, because we're not separate.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Beautiful.
I love that.
Yeah. Okay.
I love that too.
Ego? What ego? I don't have any ego.
It's really nothing, so that's the truth, Brian.
Yep.
Oh, boy. You guys are great.
Thank God for this call.
I know, right? Thank God for the course.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, have we really only read two paragraphs? I feel like we've read a whole chapter, but I guess not. Let's read another paragraph. The better self the ego seeks is always one that is more special. And whoever seems to possess a special self is loved for what can be taken from him. Where both partners see the special self in each other, the ego sees a union made in heaven. For neither one will recognize that he has asked for hell, and so he will not interfere with the ego's illusion of heaven, which it offered him to interfere with heaven. Yet if all illusions are of fear, and they can be of nothing else, the illusion of heaven is nothing more than an attractive form of fear, in which the guilt is buried deep and rises in the form of love. So I'm just rereading a sentence again. Where both partners see the special self in each other, the ego sees a union made in heaven. For neither one will recognize that he has asked for hell, and so he will not interfere with the ego's illusion of heaven, which it offered him to interfere with heaven. So this, to me, speaks to just in a special relationship, the agreement is to stay separate. The agreement is to keep guilt buried deep, as it says, rising in a form of, you know, special love. And this also speaks to me, too, the latter part of the sentence I just read, and so he will not interfere with the ego's illusion of heaven, which it offered him to interfere with heaven. The ego dream, I like how John Mundy said this in one of his books, I think it was, I don't remember, I can picture the cover, but I can't picture the title of the book. But he said that the world is like a hiding place from God, that the world was made to blot out our awareness of heaven. And so that also reminds me of that too. Anything stand out for anyone from this paragraph? Ooh, let's read another one. The appeal of hell lies only in the terrible attraction of guilt, which the ego holds out to those who place their faith in littleness. The conviction of littleness lies in every special relationship, for only the deprived could value specialness. the demand for specialness and the perception of the giving of specialness as an act of love would make love hateful. And the real purpose of the special relationship in strict accordance with the ego's goals is to destroy reality and substitute illusion. For the ego is itself an illusion, and only illusions can be the witness, the witnesses to its reality. So again, this conviction of littleness is simply a belief that we are, that we're not what we actually are, that we're something different than the love that we are. So it's this belief in the small self that pops up.
That hits the nail right on the head.
How so? Which part?
About the illusion.
Right. Yeah. I don't think I have anything else coming up that I want to say for this paragraph. Does anybody else? Oh, let's read the next paragraph.
This line.
Go on.
The conviction of littleness lies in every special relationship, for only the deprived could value specialness. So how do you see that?
Every special relationship, the purpose is to stay separate. The purpose is to, you know, keep the illusion going, and to even value specialness from the get-go, to even value the idea of being separate, we had to make ourselves little. You know, if you picture just like your true self, capital S self, the grandeur of God, we kind of took a little part of that, and and I'm speaking not in concrete examples, I'm aware of that, more of the sort of, what's the word, the metaphysics of the Course, the mythology of the Course, we had to hang on to littleness to convince ourselves that we were not in the grand or of the grandeur of God.
Right. It's almost like we're already love. We are love.
Yes.
And when we forget that, in that special relationship, it's like we're trying to get love from that person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we've already got it. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's thinking that we need it from something out, from someone out there in order to mm-hmm. get it, in order to feel secure, in order to feel confident. It's such an ego ploy to keep the separation going.
Yeah, yeah. And we could only...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go on. I was going to say we could only value that specialness if we've already, you know, stunted our own minds. We could only, you know, seek after that specialness if we've already turned away from God, because, you know, if we knew the truth of who we are, specialness would be just meaningless.
Absolutely.
So that's what that latter part of that sentence means to me.
You know, but it's that realization that God has gifted us with everything right now, right here and right now. All good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's all right here and right now. It's all apparent. And yet the ego is that thought that says, no, it's not good enough. No, you need it. You need more. It's crazy, Corinne.
It is crazy.
Craziness.
It's totally crazy. I just looked at one of my own little notes that I jotted in the margin, and I wrote, you know, a belief in the body is making yourself little. So if you're reducing your identity to, a body,
we are
making our capital S self little. We're just diminishing what we really are. Just by believing
that's,
in a body. And, of course,
really...
I wake up every morning thinking I'm a body.
this is why we got to really not be hard on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got
right.
to maintain somehow when we feel that guilt once again, it's like, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yep.
No, not guilty.
Not guilty.
It's that underlying guilt that keeps this thing going, that keeps this ego going.
Yep, very true. Let's read this next paragraph. If you perceived the special relationship as a triumph over God, would you want it? Let us not think of its fearful nature, nor of the guilt it must entail, nor of the sadness and the loneliness. For these are only attributes of the whole religion of the separation, and of the total context in which it is thought to occur. The central theme in its litany to sacrifice is that God must die so you can live. And it is this theme which is acted out in the special relationship. Through the death of yourself, you think you can attack another self and snatch it from the other to replace the self which you despise. And you despise it because you do not think it offers the specialness which you demand. And hating it, you have made it little and unworthy because you are afraid of it. The sentence that jumps out at me, I have it underlined and wow written next to it, when it says, oh gosh, I don't want to start rereading the whole paragraph, but you know, the guilt that it must entail with this idea of triumphing over God, the sadness, the loneliness, for these are only attributes of the whole religion of the separation and of the total context in which it is thought to occur. So right there, that phrase, religion of the separation, that's the laws of the world. That's the teachings of the world. It's a religion of the separation. And so, you know, for those of us who feel called to find another way through these non-dual teachings of the Course, you know, it's a very different path than the religion of the separation, because our interest now is in, again, waking up rather than staying separate. And then the latter part of that sentence, the total context in which, and of the total context in which it is thought to occur. So there, again, is evidence the separation didn't occur. It's our having thought that it occurred. So I just, that subtle little word in which it is thought to occur, I just wanted to highlight, because there again is the teaching that it didn't occur, we just think that it did. Anybody have anything to add? Anything come up for you in this paragraph? When it says through the death of yourself, again, it's through thinking that, you know, our capital S self is no more, we think we have this other self that we can then, you know, build up. So anyway, I'm going to stop talking and just see, I just looked at the clock that we're almost at the top of the hour. So pausing here, does anybody have anything coming up that you want to share? Insights, examples? I know this is heavy reading.
It really nails it.
It does.
This paragraph is pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm. Does that phrase, religion of the separation, strike anybody like it strikes me? I'm like, wow.
That's it. That's the world's teaching right there.
Yep.
Hey, family.
Oh. Hi, Carla.
Hey, I looked at that sentence when you read it, the central theme in special relationship litany to sacrifice is that God, and I'm going backwards, aren't I? Words are starting to go together.
I see that sentence, the central theme in its litany to sacrifice is that God must die so you can live.
Okay. Okay, through the death of yourself, you think you can attack another self and snatch it. From the other to face self, which you despise. Wow. I could say that is just so sick. And
it is sick.
Yeah, boy, I need to continue to read and put this into practice. So what came up was actually something I had read in chapter 17. I think it was a week ago. And it was chapter 17, part 4, I believe it is, Shadows of the Past. The very last paragraph said, I love this too, by the way. My holy brother, I would enter into all of your relationships and step between you and your fantasies. Let my relationship to you be real to you, and let me bring reality to your perception of your brother. They were not created to enable you to hurt yourself through them. They were created to create with you. This is the truth that I would interpose between you and your goal of madness. Be not separate from me. Let not the holy purpose of atonement be lost to you in dreams of vengeance. Relationships in which such dreams are cherished have excluded me. Let me enter in the name of God and bring you peace, that you may offer peace to me. I love that paragraph.
That's like such a perfect counterbalance to what we just read here.
It really is perfect.
It brings such relief.
Yeah.
Carla, could you share that reference again?
Sure. Chapter 17.
This is in the original edition?
Yeah, the original edition.
Okay.
That's chapter 17, and that's section 4, Shadows of the Past.
Cool, thank you.
And
where would that be in this edition, Corinne? Do you know?
I will find it. I'll find it, and I'll post it tonight on the Miracle Share group.
Good.
Okay, so what was standing out for me in the paragraph that I read, listening to what you were reading and snatching away another self and all that, is just simply that my brothers were not created for me to hurt myself through. They were created to create with me. And so when I can remember that and stay rooted in that, then that's going to assist me with avoiding using the special relationships for the egoic purposes that they were set out for. And instead, it makes me more conscious, more clear about what the hell I'm doing. And so I don't keep going down the same street and winding up in the same predicament. Because I've seen myself do it over and 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 over, and I'm tired of it. I'm just really just literally just tired of it. And so when I read this about a week ago, it was like, boom, there it is right there. So if ever I think, because not only do I get hurt, but my brother gets hurt too. So
yep.
Whenever I think that, you know, I'm going to make this decision and do this with this relationship or that with the relationship, I just stop. So right now I'm just in freeze mode right now where that's concerned, considering that my judgment has definitely been off in terms of what the relationships are in my experience for. So, and since I keep using them to hurt myself, it's like I'm not going to find sanity doing that. So I need to just do something different. And so this is the motivation to do something different, that they're not here. You all are not here for me to hurt myself through, you know. And as it stands, I had a situation last week with a female, and I was telling her something that was bothering me, and she's a course student, and one of the things she said was, well, you know, you created it. Do you know how much I want to go through that phone and slap her? You know, it's like, it was one of those things where it's like, I know she's experienced some very painful things in her life, and I know she wouldn't appreciate it if somebody said, well, you know, you created it. so I have to be mindful, too, that there's that spiritual ego, too, that is still a part of my mind. So that just makes me more sensitive when other people are sharing with me. So I might be thinking it, but damn, I sure won't say it, you know, especially having been on the other end of it. So, again, I'm going to hold to that, you know, and ask Jesus to step between me and my fantasies of my brothers and in some case sisters, but just that I am looking to the Holy Spirit to tell me about me in every situation that I think I might find myself in. Glory be to God today. Thank y'all. I love you. Thank you.
That was beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Carla, I have two things I just have to say, and one is, wow, I'm so glad this call is recorded because I'm going to listen to what you just said again because that was just you nailed it. That this was just such a perfect way to end the call. And the second thing that I wanted to say, I don't know if you feel this or sense this, and if you don't, it's okay, but to me, you feel like you're in such a – you've had such a big shift. You're in such a different place than where you, you know, were when you've shared in previous weeks. It feels like something's moved, you know, like a foundation has shifted in a good way, you know, like a foundation being built on the Holy Spirit rather than, you know, the shabby ego foundation of mud and straw. So I just have to really say, just thank you. That was so helpful.
Can I share one little
thing? I agree.
One little short thing, because I know we're out of time, but was what Carla just shared in the passage that she just read that was so perfect. I just really feel like in that passage, it's the Holy Spirit giving us permission that if we're using anything to hurt ourselves, to lay it down. Lay it down. You know?
Yeah.
It's not needed.
But that's that ego notion that it would rather be right than happy. And, you know, just this was wonderful. I just thank you. I don't want to get back into the ego's thinking here, but you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Do you mean, I'm sorry, well, I guess I kind of missed this through line to the I'd rather be right than happy.
Well, what did you say prior to that?
Oh, yeah. I felt like, you know, if we're using a relationship or anything in the world of form to be hurt ourselves, that it's kind of like how the body, like we lay the body down when it's finished. So if we're using anything to hurt ourselves, then we, with spirit, can lay it down. We don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
We can lay it down.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, so much for an awesome, awesome call.
Awesome
I love you
call.
All.
Good night.
Have a great week, everybody. Good night.
You too.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Love it.